The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. Now, one of the reasons that I love Cool Stuff Inc. is because of their rewards program, which you become a member of just by making a purchase. After that, every purchase you make pushes you towards another level of the program, which means even more savings. Right now, I'm on level 6, which means I save 8% on all of my magic singles and 2% on booster boxes and board games. So head on over to CoolStuffInc.com and start saving money today. Friends and neighbors, welcome to episode number 3 of the Girlfriend Bracket, the new and noteworthy Girlfriend Bracket, according to iTunes. Did you all see that?
Yeah, that was
sweet. Yes, we did.
That was pretty awesome. I admit I have a really bad habit of checking iTunes regularly. I used to do it when I was doing the deck tees, and I would just see if I charted, you know, see if I made a dent anywhere. And when I looked at the front page, I was scrolling through and I saw our picture and I said, oh, that's us up there. And people have just been amazing. We've been getting so much love and likes and messages. And thank you to everybody that's been supporting us. It really means a lot. So let's go ahead and get started. I was worried we weren't going to have anything to talk about with this past weekend, and the Magic community came through, and we actually have so much to talk about, so I'm really glad that that all worked out. The biggest topic, which we're going to go ahead and get into first, is limited resources, which is now LSV and Marshall Sutcliffe, decided they were going to release a listener survey because they wanted to find out some more about who listened to their show. And unsurprisingly, the majority of the people who responded to the survey were male. I think the breakdown was 1,500 guys to 52 women.
Something like that.
And there was a mixture of reactions between the two hosts. Marshall felt one way and LSV felt another. And the conversation bled over into the limited resources subreddit. And several threads were started about this too. And it was very interesting to watch go down. What did you guys think about this?
So I guess one of them remarked that Mark Rosewater thought that their, or I guess based on their statistics, had figured out that 30% of the magic community was women.
It was 38, yeah.
That seems abnormally high to me. I don't know, did that seem kind of off to you guys?
I don't know. I mean, that was actually what Marshall was saying on the show. He said something like, I don't buy it that 38% were women. But then again, Marshall mostly interacts with people who play in Grand Prix and Pro Tours, and I think the survey covered a wider variety of people who play Magic. So it could have been just a sample size thing. Like, I think they surveyed people who, I don't even know if it was people who had DCI numbers, it was people who identified as Magic fans or people who had played the game at some point. And I think if you have a larger sample size like that, you're more likely to get more women or higher percentages of women to answer.
I think there was also something about the definition about whether or not someone is a Magic player versus if they've just played once or twice. I mean, my sister played D&D once, doesn't mean that she's rolling dice every week or anything like that. So it could be that, you know, someone just responded. They're like, oh, I did that one time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember when the Mark Rosewater post came out, because it happened on his Tumblr. Somebody had asked him if he knew what the ratio of male to female players was, and it came down to 38% female and 62% male, and that was per market research, as he described it. People were kind of wondering, well, what does that include? Like, does that mean people who have DCI numbers, like you said, Hallie? Does that mean people who have just purchased things? Like, you know, is that focus groups? Like, what are we dealing with here? And Wizards being Wizards is obviously not going into those numbers. So we're left to sort of try to figure out what that means. But I kind of agree with, I'm coming from the same position as Marshall where, you know, I only go to opens and I only go to GPs and things like that. So from where I'm sitting, I don't see very many women. Furthermore, you know, I used to do this thing where I would go through the SCG open pairings or the standings, and I would try to pick out how many women I could find. And I did that for GPs too. And I would find that the standard number of women was like 2%. Like that was the standard attendance, but from what I could see. But that was usually just the main event. That didn't include side events or things like that. So, you know, from my own experiences, it does sound like that number is low, but we don't know what happens at kitchen tables. You know, there are people who buy dual decks and just use them as dual decks. And there are people who buy commander products and just use them right out of the box. You know, there's a lot of things that we don't see.
Right. I mean, even at my local store, there aren't even a ton of women. Like at F&M, if we have a 70-person F&M, there are generally between like 2 and 5 women in the entire tournament. Maybe you get a few more for pre-releases, but it's a very low number, a very low percentage.
Yeah. At my local game store, more women come out for the pre-releases. Like, I will probably see more women this weekend. I see even more women coming out for the Two-Headed Giant. Like, we get a lot of couples that will come out for that, you know, girlfriends or wives who wouldn't normally be interested in the game otherwise, but if it gives them an opportunity to play with their partner, they'll come out for that, and they'll have a really good time.
Right.
So. Yeah, we see a lot more at pre-releases than we see in the 3 months in between them.
And why do you guys think that is? Like, I know the subreddit was tossing around things like, well, women just aren't as competitive and things of that nature. Like, do you think it's that?
I'm not sure. I mean, it could just be an awareness thing. I think that more, I don't know. I think there aren't a lot of women, or at least a lot of women that I talk to, like at the Lady Planeswalker Society or at F&M, that just aren't aware of limited resources. But then again, that could just be my own sort of sample size bias. I don't know. I think it could also be that the survey was actually started on Reddit. So it was a longtime LR listener who created the survey just sort of to see what the demographics are. It wasn't something that Marshall or Luis created. And it could be that there just happened to be more men on the LR subreddit or something. I'm really not sure. But I'm thinking there could be some kind of a sample size bias in there somewhere.
Yeah, definitely. What did you think of their reactions to it? Because Marshall and LSV came at it from two different angles. It seemed like Marshall was being more cautious, you know, like he definitely doesn't want to isolate listeners. Like he tries to keep it as fair and balanced as possible and indicated that he, you know, while he noticed that there were not many women that replied to the survey and possibly not many women listening, he wasn't going to go out of his way to specifically get more women listeners because he didn't want to seem like he was pandering. Mm-hmm. Whereas LSV was of the mindset of, and I loved him even more after this, where he was saying, you know, it is our responsibility to get more women involved and to say things when we see things. And I was very, very impressed with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I really liked LSV's stance. He said something along the lines of, like, I think Marshall said something like, you know, you can be however you want to be with your friends, but when it's, you know, in a public setting or whatever, something along those lines he was insinuating. And LSV was like, no, people shouldn't be how they want to be with their friends. They should be open and welcome, like, all the time.
Right.
And I really like that stance. And he said, you know, be comfortable, but be involved in your community and try and make F&Ms like a welcome environment for everyone, because what harm is there in making it fun? Like, why would you want to dissuade people from coming to your tournaments when having more people is always better? Yeah. And I really liked his stance on that too.
Yeah, I was happy that he kind of stood behind that and was like, you know, don't be discriminatory to anyone. If you, you know, see something, say something. I mean, they say that at most tournaments. I think that should be pointed out for discrimination if someone feels comfortable. But I had a comment about Marshall indicating it could be seen as being pandering if there was a Women's Day unlimited resources, that some may see it as pandering. And I can understand and appreciate what, you know, he's saying, but not everything is pandering, but I can see how it could be walking a fine line. And I just believe that every woman needs to decide for herself what they would consider to be pandering. Something like that, having, you know, a prominent female Magic player on the show might get more listeners in. It wouldn't hurt to try.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree with you, Chris. Yeah. I think I agree with, I mostly agreed with what Marshall was saying, that like, there's nothing about the show that inherently shuts out women, and, you know, he should just sort of keep doing what he's doing because it's obviously mm-hmm. working. But, you know, having a female guest on the show every now and then, not necessarily because she's a female guest, but just to have a to have more people on the show who represent like a wider variety of viewpoints would be cool.
Marshall's opinion is not, or his feeling on things is not so uncommon. Like, there are a lot of men out there who feel like if they support women more, or if they do something to appeal to women, that they're immediately going to isolate men. Like, they don't understand that you can do both, that you can support women, and you can be a feminist, and you can be all of these things, and it doesn't mean that you're turning your back on your guy friends, or that you're shitting on men. You know, people assume it has to be an either-or proposition. Mm-hmm. So I didn't think it was so uncommon when Marshall said, or when it felt like he was, you know, walking that line where he's like, oh, I want to do this, but I don't want to, and I hear that a lot, actually.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so the other podcast that mentioned us this week was MTG Focus.
Yeah.
And they had Brian David Marshall on as a guest, and they were talking about, you know, how would people feel if Wizards did more to promote women in the community. So maybe that's giving women pro tour invites based on their level of competition or whatever. And I think that kind of goes hand in hand with this. Like, should we be doing things specifically like that to get women into the game more? And I don't think, I mean, as cool as it would be to get just a free pro tour invite, I think that it would be better to have earned it. And I think that men and women can both appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that in regard to what he asked him about whether or not he felt Wizards had a responsibility, I do think that any kind of visibility, like Aaron's talked about before, whether they're part of, you know, a stage crew at a pro tour or they're just milling around a GP, there needs to be more visibility of women there. So I do think that Wizards has been making strides to acknowledge more women. I think they just need to keep it up, you know, consistently. Liz from Wizards was leading that PAX East Magic 2015 panel, and it was a positive step for sure. And she was actually recently interviewed by Rich Stein from Hipsters of the Coast for his What We Learned feature. And she commented on duels, Magic Online, pro tour coverage, but she also answered some questions about women in the Magic community, and she addressed some concerns. Like, I won't read the whole thing because it's quite little long, but just to kind of paraphrase, he asked her if there was a topic that she had hoped to cover at the panel, but they ended up being cut short for time. And she actually said that they had wanted to talk quite a bit about Alicia and Narset, but mm-hmm. they didn't get as many questions as they thought they were going to. And they did have a gentleman that approached her after the fact to ask what they were doing as a company to create safe spaces in the play community. And she acknowledged that at the premier level, there are good things going on, but that in some local stores, they are a toxic environment. And she indicated that they were going to try to address that. They talked about having a series of training videos to give to retailers to seek out the toxic people in your Magic community to try to do something about that. And I think there was also something that stores could level up as part of that program. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's good to know that there's something in place and that they are aware of some of the things that are going on.
Yeah. Did she actually say that in the interview? Like, was this in writing that there are toxic stores?
Yes, she said.
Wow.
Let's see. She said, we're very active about that premiere play, but not in local stores. We know some are awesome and some aren't. And she said, Wizards Play Network is working on training retailers to identify toxic players and identify whatever the bad blood is in the community at any given point in time to help figure out how to eradicate it.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. I was like, wow, that's pretty cool.
Interesting because, you know, from a judge standpoint, identifying, it's kind of gray when you're talking about regular REL and how people are behaving. Because there are times when judges are like, well, there's only eight guys like in the store. They're all hanging out. They're all making lewd comments, but everybody is, okay with it, like that's their group, there's nobody else there, versus FNMs where there's family and children and how to balance that line. And a lot of the times it is kind of up to the TO how they want to run their store. Like there are TOs that are like, you know, this is not, we're not appealing to kids at this store. And so, you know, this is more of an adult environment, you know, and this is not basically like women in general, but you know, language coming down to things like that, what kind of jokes are appropriate and stuff. And a TO kind of sets a lot of the standards for that in their store. Mm-hmm. I think that GPs are more welcoming, actually. Like, I think everybody's just more in a professional mindset when you go to a GP. Like, you just, I don't know. I guess you don't have rule of the roost like you do in your own store. Mm-hmm. Something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. I do think it was interesting. I was listening to, I did listen to the BDM interview on MTG Focus, and I'm not sure how I feel about the lady pro tour invites, because I remember when Melissa got her invite, and there was such a firestorm around that, and, you know, there was, and even though she was Melissa freaking Datora, you know, there were still people that said, she doesn't deserve this, what is she doing there, and if she can't even convince people that it's a good idea, and if people are not a fan of her being invited, what hope do the rest of us have that aren't at her level? Like, I just see that being terribly negative. I don't see that going over well.
Right. Yeah, I listened to the show also, and I remember Roberto suggested that there be something like a women's league, sort of in the same, using the model as the Vintage Super League. And I wasn't sure that I agreed with that either. Like, it seemed like a good thing to promote visibility, but I can't help but wonder if, like, segregating women and giving them their own space where they're all vying to achieve something is really fixing the problem or creating new problems. Mm-hmm.
It does feel almost like a punishment, or like you're being, you know, like you, I can't think of the wording of it, but it's just like, it just doesn't.
It's like you're being ostracized.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and you know, you look at things like the WNBA, and yeah, women have their own basketball leagues, but do you see people wearing hats and jerseys from the WNBA? Do you see advertisers clamoring to put up their commercials during at WNBA basketball games? You know, you know, it is theirs, but it just doesn't have the same level of respect. It doesn't have the same, you know, draw that the NBA has, and that's kind of what I worry about.
Yeah, they also made some comparisons to chess on the podcast. And, you know, before I started playing Magic, I had a very close friend, still have a very close friend, who's a woman grandmaster in chess. And all of her experiences about, you know, competing along with men have just, I don't know, it just seems like she felt very othered. Mm-hmm. In that environment. Like, I would go to chess tournaments with her, and it would be even worse than when I go to Magic tournaments. Like, men would just sort of stare at us and be like, what are you doing here? And it was just like, I don't know, between like all she was telling me about like how there are different titles for women, that like the woman grandmaster threshold is so much lower than the male grandmaster threshold, and mm-mm. You know, how some US Chess League teams were given like incentives to have women on their teams just to sort of like promote diversity. Like, they had to really like nag at them to put women on their teams, and that was how she got on a team.
No.
Like, it was it just really soured me on that culture. And when I came to Magic, like right after that, I was like, wow, you know, this is a community where men and women can compete alongside each other, and there's no segregation, there are no boundaries to what women can achieve in this game, except for, you know, just problems and toxicity at the local level. So I don't want Magic to be like that. I don't want there to be a separate league for women. You know, I think there is some other solution to the problem, whether it's, you know, more women just going out of their way to create content, or, you know, more women like joining forces and forming larger teams like what men are doing. Like, I'm not sure what the solution is, but I feel like there's a better one.
Well, I also think one might be coming up on its own. BDM brought up a really good point about the number of women that are on the verge. Like I think people forget that the time it takes a grinder to break through. You know, there are some people that have that overnight success, and then there are the ones that we see toiling away for years and years and years. And then Brian Brown Duin was an example. You know, he was somebody that we saw on Star City Games. They were selling him as he's about to break through. He's going to do it. And then he won GP Louisville. Yeah. And from then on, he was on that rocket ride. And I feel like I see a number of women that are scary good, like Gabby Spartz and my friend Jess Buchanan and Janine Klomperens and Feline Longmore. You know, I can name so many Johnny Bailey that, you know, with just a little more time and the practice and everything they're putting into it, I think we're going to see them break through. But it does take time for them to get to that point. Yeah. So I think that we have several women that are on the bubble. They're just not quite there yet.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. Another thing I took away from the Focus interview was there was somebody mentioned that stores don't often jump in on things like this because they feel like they can't change the industry or they can't change the world. So why bother? And I thought that was very interesting. Like I've never felt that way myself. So I'm trying to put myself in their shoes and how they might feel that way.
Yeah, because that seems like defeatist logic.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think sometimes people just get overwhelmed with things. Like, this is such a big issue, not just in Magic, but, you know, all aspects of, like, gaming and the comic industry. They mentioned portrayal of women in comics and how it is improving. And I don't think that everything we're saying is, like, negative. I do think that overall, all of the gaming industry is going in a healthier direction, but I don't think that means that you can be just lax about it and not do anything. Like, I think everybody kind of needs to do their part in continuing to fuel that engine. But in regards to the stores not doing anything, I feel like if all the stores just did a tiny bit more, it could make a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. It really could. I mean, the two stores that I frequent down here, Coliseum Games and Rockheads Comics and Games, I have never had a problem really with anyone there. I know, especially Rockheads, they have like a zero tolerance policy for anything. You know, say something you shouldn't say, you know, that's derogatory to someone else, you know, whether it's attacking their sexuality, something else, you're gone. You get a chance, you don't come back. You know, you can try to, you know, apologize, make something right, but, you know, stuff like that, they really don't stand for. I mean, Nick had to deal with someone the other day that, you know, called another Yu-Gi-Oh player a faggot. And he was told, you do that again, you're never coming back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think having the support of the TOs means a lot more than maybe the TOs think. Especially for stores that don't have judges in them or have anybody that's facilitating what's going on and being said. Being able to go to your TO and be like, hey, I'm kind of having a problem with this person. Instead of me talking to them, maybe you could discuss it with them and let them know it's not okay. That line of reasoning is a lot easier for people to get behind, I think.
It all sounds like a feeling of what can I do? You know, we talked about how it really is little things, and that a lot of times when people listen to our show or they talk to us and say, what can we do? They expect these really grand sweeping gestures. And like you said, Chris, it really is something as little as if you hear something, say something about it. Clean your bathroom. That was another one we talked about. Very basic. Let's not even talk about the bathrooms at the tournament I was at this weekend. It was awful. But anyways, you know, it's little things like that. And that's the thing. You have people going, what can I do? And then you have people that say, I can't do enough. And I think both of those attitudes really keep people from getting involved. So on that note, the last thing I wanted to add to that was LSV said something that just blew me away. And he said that we all have a responsibility to say something. And he also said people who have good intentions but don't speak up are really part of the problem. And for him to say that, wow.
Yeah, he said, like, by not saying anything, you're enabling it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, LSV, you are one badass dude.
I know, my thought was, LSV rocks.
Yeah. It meant a lot to hear that because, you know, there is a subsection of the community that is more likely to listen to you if you're good at the game. There is a meritocracy in magic where, people do want to know your resume and they do want to know what you've done. So for someone like him at his level to speak up about this, I think that he has the ability to reach a lot of people that maybe we couldn't reach because we're not quote unquote good players. And I think that was a really good thing. So. So other than that, I mean, I was happy that we were, and they also plugged us as well. They said the girlfriend bracket on the focus, so that felt awesome.
Thanks, guys.
Yay, thank you.
Yeah, so it's nice to hear that we're part of the discussion.
I saw that Patrick Sullivan listened because he was looking for a new podcast, and he said that he enjoyed it too. So we're getting around
Yeah.
in a good way.
Yeah,
That's awesome. That's awesome. So the next thing on the docket is some Channel Fireball drama this past weekend. There was a writer for Channel Fireball named James Fazzolari who was playing at Grand Prix Auckland, and he was caught cheating.
Wah, wah.
His, I know, his opponent made a statement on Reddit detailing what happened. Apparently, they're friends. And within the next 24 hours, Channel Fireball released a very brief tweet saying that Channel Fireball and James Fazzolari are no longer associated with one another, implying that he was fired. What did you all think of this?
I think the thing that interested me the most was actually when Fazzolari came clean about what happened. Just his reasoning for why he cheated was just so mind-blowing. He said that he felt that he needed to put up better results and sort of maintain his status within the community, and that's why he cheated. And I don't know, I found that so bizarre just because I can think of endless numbers of players who just, achieved something at one GP or one Pro Tour, and then all of a sudden they become respected members of the community. Like, I don't think of status as something that you need to maintain over time. So I don't know. It was just really interesting to me.
I think I see it, I guess, a little differently because there are some people who remain in the community and remain, respected and whatnot, but there are some people that just kind of fall off the radar and you never hear from again. And I think I was not familiar with Fazzolari before this, but I can see that as being a fear. I don't think I would cheat based upon that, but I can see that, there's a few Hall of Famers and whatnot who are still part of the community but haven't put up results for a very long time. And I could see, being frustrated with that.
I it didn't surprise me at all. And actually, I felt that pressure as a public figure in the magic community. I felt that pressure as a woman in the community. I felt that. And it didn't surprise me at all. And I was actually happy that somebody was talking about it because it is something I think we don't hear enough about. And we do play a game that has a lot of focus and a lot of emphasis on being number one. Somebody can top eight a Grand Prix, which is awesome and so hard to do these days. I know Hall of Famers that won't even go to GPs because they're like, it's too hard. There's just too many people. And that's an amazing feat to top eight a GP, but we never hear from them. You don't hear about the guy who went in fourth place, or you don't hear about the girl who came in seventh. You just don't. You hear about the person who came in first. It's their face on the slide. It's their name on the slider. They are the ones that will possibly get offered a spot on TCG Player. There's a lot of emphasis on being number one. And I think even more so if you've had a taste of it, it's really hard to go back to those back tables once you've been to the top.
I think if he did feel a lot of pressure to win and produce results, maybe he indicated that his head was not, in the right frame of mind. Maybe he needs to maybe get some professional help for that or take a break and focus on himself and think about what he wants to do now because, yeah, I mean, he cheated. I feel no need to commend him for admitting that. I know a lot of people on our spikes were like, oh, thanks for, admitting that. But I guess to me, if you did something wrong, you should just say that you did it. I feel awful that he cheated his own friend. That made it worse for me because I can't even imagine going down to that to be like, I feel all this pressure to do this thing. Now I have to play someone that I also respect. They're a friend of mine. And to know what you're going to do, I can't even imagine how he felt. I do hope he legitimately does, feel bad for what happened. sometimes people don't feel bad about what they do and how it affects other people, but hopefully he can use his time to reflect on his actions and how people will perceive him.
His friend said something interesting in the summary of what happened. He said something along the lines of, like you said, Chris, I hope he uses this time to reflect and change, because I do believe people can change. Do you think cheaters can change? Do you think that, or do you think that once a cheater, always a cheater?
That's a tricky one. I think it depends on the person. I mean, I know that there were some people in the R Spikes subreddit, and then also in the MTG subreddit, where some people mentioned that they had had a weird experience with him before, that they possibly suspected he could have cheated them, or he always ended up having, you know, just the right luck, or that he had, you know, a weird attitude. So there's a lot of different camps. And then there's other people that have been like, he's been super nice to me, I've never had a problem with him. You know, maybe it was just in that particular moment he felt the need to do this. And if that's the case, then maybe he can take this time and come back as a better person. But if it's been a problem throughout, maybe he can't change. It's hard to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some things that people do that is technically cheating. Like, say you draw an extra card in your opening hand and you have 8 cards. And then you're like, oh my god, I drew an extra card. I didn't mean to. But now, what do I do? Do I call a judge? Like, I'm probably going to get in trouble. That's what a lot of people have in their mindset. Mm-hmm. And then by not electing to take an action based on that, now you're cheating. And so, you know, if they were like, well, I knew it was wrong, but I didn't do anything about it, even though they didn't mean to do the action. And I think that people do make mistakes. And sometimes they're not caught, and sometimes they are. But I think if you made an unintentional mistake, like drawing an extra card in your opening hand and you didn't call a judge, do I think that that labels you as a cheater for life? No, probably not. But I do think that there are people that are well known in the community for cheating, and I think probably some of them are not going to change their ways.
Yeah.
They have to want to change, too. I know when Bert and Sini came back to the game, I never knew him personally. I've never physically shared space with him. I would just see him on camera, and I would just see him when he would top 8 things, because they would take his picture. He looked so harmless to me. Like, he looked like an impish kind of guy, where I was like, that's big, bad Bert and Sini. Like, he looks like he's changed. Like, he looks, and people were like, no. Like, talk to him, be around him, nothing has changed. And, you know, I think it's also how you come off. Like, if you're coming back to the game after something like that, you need to be showing some sort of humility. You need to show that you've made some changes. Otherwise, you are going to be slapped with that label, and it's going to be very hard for you to shake it.
When you get banned, are you still allowed to play Modo? They don't regulate that, do they?
Yeah, because that's not sanctioned.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I seem to recall even WotC, like, I know, so when Jerry Thompson had left Wizards, you know, they normally have that that time where if you leave the company, you can't play in any events because you might know what's in the sets. I think that's what it is.
Right, yeah.
I know that he said he was still able to play Modo because it wasn't sanctioned or anything like that.
Yeah, I think you're banned by the DCI, not by Wizards itself, so you can still play on Magic Online, just not in DCI-sanctioned events.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like... I mean, I heard rumors, and I don't know if this is true, just around the rumor mill, but that Bert and Chini would stream, and I heard that he has, like, a shirt that just says, like, yes, I cheat, or something like that. And it seems like, you know, if that is the case, then flaunting it seems like maybe he's not changing. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Without having ever met him or interacted with him on any level, you know.
And why would you be proud of that? Like, I don't understand. Especially the career that he's had. I mean, I can't say whether or not he cheated when he earned any of the things he's earned, because he has several top 8s under his belt and things like that. I don't know which of those were rightfully earned, quote-unquote, or not, but boast about that. You know, top 8 competitor Alex Bertoncini, that's something worth talking about. Why go there? Like, I don't understand.
I don't get it either.
And that makes it really hard to root for someone like that.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So the pre-releases are coming up this weekend. I'm pretty sure we all have made our plans already, or we know what we're going to do. Hallie, you're doing your sprint through four of them?
Yep.
Okay.
I'm all ready.
You've been doing your pull-ups and your chin-ups? And
yep. Got my trail mix, got my water bottle, I'm all set.
Okay. Me and Chris are going to be doing a pre-release, a midnight pre-release on Friday. So I don't know why I agreed to this. My day is going to be, so I will be getting up at 5:30 in the morning to go to work. Yeah. I will be working 8 hours. Then Chris will be picking me up and we will be going straight to F&M, which I will be playing four rounds of Modern, cut to top eight. So of course I'll be making the cut to top eight. Then there's another round or two of that. Then comes the midnight pre-release, which is four rounds, right?
I think so.
Yes, usually.
Yeah. I don't know what I'm thinking, but I agreed to do it. So do you guys know what clans you're going to play?
I'm playing Ojutai.
Okay.
I'll probably play Ojutai or Salumgar.
Really? Yay. Two control players?
Yes. Delicious. I can't decide which one has more cards that I want. Or
I know,
tried.
They're both wonderful.
I can't wait. I can't wait for Standard.
Me too.
I'm sort of doing the sampler, but I'm also excited about Ojutai and Salumgar.
Hallie!
I'm a good player at heart. You know me.
It's funny. Somebody actually tweeted us, our friend Jason, and he said, I really like that there's so many tempo and control players on your show. And I'm like, oh. So we're tapping into that niche control market.
Yes. Blue Mage for life.
Man.
Indeed.
Team Azorius.
I don't know any of you.
Well, somebody has to rep Team Jund, so.
Yeah, that's fine. I will probably play either Dramoka or Silumgar, because I do like the Abzan house in that set. And I think that we do still get packs of cons, right? Is it all dragons?
No, it's like four dragons, one Fate Reforged, and a Seated Booster.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There was a video I saw about it earlier this week where they're like, this is what you're going to get, this is what the dice look like, et cetera, et cetera. It was pretty cool.
So basically, Dramoka would be Selesnya.
Yep.
Oh, okay. I'll go Silumgar then.
Yes.
I need some sort of black in my life. I could do maybe Kolaghan, I don't know. But I do have this weird habit of playing aggro decks at pre-releases. I would never play them in any other aspect of my life, but you put me in a pre-release, and if all I have to do is turn them sideways, I'm in.
Yeah.
It seems like
a safe plan when you're not really sure of everything that's going on in the set. Like, you may have looked at spoilers, but I feel like, I don't know. I never remember tricks or anything. People cast stuff and I'm like, oh, what does that do? What does that do, like, every turn? So I think that's a safe plan.
Yeah. Are there any specific cards that you all are looking forward to?
Oh, I have a list.
I'm looking forward to Rending Volley because in Modern it reads Destroy Target Deceiver Exarch.
Yes, it does. Get them. I have a list, too. I think that, let's see, Display of Dominance. It's a green and one instant. Choose one. Destroy target blue or black non-creature permanent. Permanents you control. Can't be the targets of blue or black spells your opponents control this turn. I think that'll see a good amount of play in sideboards and standard. I think green is just going to be really strong, like Green Devotion.
Yes, there's going to be some bad cards for that.
I really liked Collected Company also, the one that lets you tutor up like three creatures with power. It's not necessarily tutor up, but you reveal the top six cards, you look at the top six cards of your library, and if you get like two creatures with CMC 3 or less, you can put them into play. So I'm just like, cool, tutor up two Rabble Masters. That sounds fun.
That sounds awful.
I've heard talk about that card maybe being, like, the next pod in Modern. I don't think it'll really be a thing, but I guess you can play that card. And then, let's see, there's a card that puts three on top of your deck in any order, so then you could search up, you know, your pieces and then reveal them with that other instant and put them into play and then somehow win.
Yeah.
Speaking of green, I've heard a lot of people be excited about Explosive Vegetation.
Mm-hmm.
People are stoked about that card. They're looking for some ramp.
Which one's that?
That is the one, I think it's two and a green or three and a green. And it's three and a green. It's a sorcery. Search your library for up to two basic land cards and put them onto the battlefield tapped. Then shuffle your library. And it also means it's modern legal now. I guess it wasn't before.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Me being the black mage that I am, I love the new duress art. I definitely want a copy of that for my sideboard. I'm excited about Risen Executioner. That is the zombie, two and two black. Can't block. Other zombies get +1/+1, and you can cast it from your graveyard if you pay one colorless more for each other creature card in your graveyard. It's a 4/3. I'm excited about this. Like, you all are excited about dragons. I want to do something with zombies. That's...
Yeah, I like Risen Executioner a lot, and I was looking through and wondering, like, hey, how many zombies are actually in this set? And there are a lot that you wouldn't think of.
Yeah, they're not that very good, though. Like, it's not like Innistrad, where you had, like, Gravecrawler and Geralt's Messenger and, you know, Diagraph Ghoul. You know, you have, like, you have the blue-black zombie harpy from Pharaoh's set, and you have, you have Gary. You have these really just sort of, you know, these not-so-great zombies. But I do see that card having potential.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about that.
I'm waiting for Gary to make his comeback. I think that his time will come again.
There was a mono black deck that was going around for a couple of weeks with Squelching Leeches.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Squelching. Hallie faced it. You lost to it, didn't you?
I lost to it in a PTQ, and it was really embarrassing.
Yeah, it was a Squelching Leeches, Whip of Erebos, Abhorrent Overlord, the guy that makes harpies when he's cast with
I black didn't devotion. See Abhorrent Overlord, but
he's like seven mana, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Herald of Go big. Herald of Torment. Yeah, it was a good time. Brain Maggot was in some of them.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking of playing it, but then it didn't stick. Like, it was kind of like a flavor of the week. But that's another one. I know Mono Blue Devotion is another deck that people are predicting might come back with that the Storm Crasher.
Yeah, the new Morphling, yeah.
Yeah. Like, do you think that could be the case?
I think they didn't quite get enough good stuff to make it a thing again, but, you know, I say that and then I'll be proved wrong, so.
Cut to 3 weeks from now and we're like, Katie, what did you do this weekend? I lost to Mono Blue Devotion.
No.
Man.
How do we feel about the black Damnable Pact? Target player draws
Love it.
Cards and loses
I think it's
life.
Cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And the red one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really like that's sort of red's thing now, where it's, you know, the black has always been the color where you pay life to get cards and things like that, and you know, you see it with Chandra, where Chandra has the exile, and then there was the I think it was called Outpost Siege, and then there was the card that had Chandra on it. Was it like Act with Impulse or something?
Yeah,
like, I love that's red's thing now. I think that's a really cool way to evolve the color.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Damnable Pact looks like a lot of fun. I can't wait to just say to somebody, draw 8 cards, and then they're like, okay, and then you're like, and lose 8 life, bye, and that looks like
Thanks
a lot of fun.
Thanks for showing up.
Right. Thanks for trying, girl. Yeah, it looks like fun. So that was it for me. I mean, Deadly Wanderings, of course, because, again, I love black cards, and Ultimate Price is back, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very excited about that, and...
I think we'll see, like, a sack deck. You know how Cartel Aristocrat kind of had, like, its niche?
Yeah.
I think that we'll see something like that. Like, we got the white card that's instant, and you put X11s into play.
Oh, Secure the Wastes?
Yeah. And I think that there's, like, a lot of shenanigans, especially with Exploit and Graveyards and... all sorts of things. I feel like somebody will brew up something good that's in that realm.
Timuret is still a thing.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I was going to say, sorry. Go ahead.
No, you.
Oh, I was going to say, it's funny that you should mention that card, because one of my friends, who's a big red mage and aggro player, sent me a list today of a deck he brewed up with Secure the Wastes and Purphoros and a whole bunch of other token creators. So, yeah, we'll see if that's a thing.
Oh, man. So when I was doing the deck tease, and I used to have Hallie on to discuss spoilers, we had what we called the WTF segment, the what the fuck segment, where we would talk about cards that we either just openly didn't like, or cards that we didn't understand, or cards where we just didn't know why they were here. And Hallie and I thought it might be a great idea to bring that segment to this show. So I asked you all to come up with some cards that meet those criteria. So Hallie, why don't you start us off with your what the fuck card?
My what the fuck card was Wandering Tomb Shell, because it's just really, really sad. It's basically an alternate universe version of Meandering Tower Shell from Cons, you know, the Dirtle Turtle, lovable Dirtle Turtle, who would start to attack and then lose his way, but eventually find his way back again. And now he's just a lowly 1/6 at common, who's all crusty and dead, and just makes me so sad.
He's got like a castle on his back, though. That's something.
Yeah, but it's like a
no one's gonna live there.
It's a bunch of ruins on his back. It's so sad.
Maybe you could just like fix it up, get some HGTV in there, and just dust it off.
Right now, it's not prime real estate.
No. Fair. Aww.
It'll
Maybe
be like
Citizen Lives.
Instead of trading spaces, you have trading tomb shells. Chris, what is your what the fuck card?
I have two. The first one was Blessed Reincarnation. That just didn't seem good to me, to exile target creature an opponent controls. That player reveals cards from the top of his or her library until a creature card is revealed. The player puts that card onto the battlefield, shuffles the rest into his or her library, and it has rebound. I just don't see the point to it myself. I mean, if someone else has an idea, please let me know. But for me, it just didn't seem like it made a lot of sense.
I just see that backfiring horribly, like especially when you're in a limited setting and your deck is full of this motley crew of creatures. Like I can see you picking something really innocuous, and then all of a sudden you do the exile thing, and you're like, "Here's Dromoka," and you're like, "Shit!" And I just don't see that going well. Like there's a lot of room for error and randomness there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just seems like a bad scene. And the other one I had was Clone Legion. Like I was like, "What?" Like, I could see where they were maybe going with that, but I don't think we got to the same station with our trains, on that logic train. Mm-hmm. So I just didn't really like it. For each creature, target player controls, put a token onto the battlefield that's a copy of that creature. 7 colorless, 2 blue. It seems like it's pretty high costed. I get what it does, but still, I just don't see the point. Now, don't get me wrong, Clever Impersonator is a pretty cool card. Granted, it costs a lot less than that, but still my ex-boyfriend played it and ruined everyone's day, so it could happen.
I can attest to that. I played against him.
Your ex-boyfriend ruins a lot of days.
but he's cool. I think he just likes to be very trolly.
He sent us another tweet today and said something along the lines of, "I've already done the dragon deck. You know, that's old news," because we talked about him building a dragon deck last episode. He does listen, and he's taking our suggestions, apparently.
Yeah, he had a deck called Devotion to Dragons. It was pretty crazy.
Clone Legion, I think the EDH people are going to love that. And my friend Renee Hupp, who I follow, said something along the lines of, "If my husband ever casts Clone Legion against me, I'm filing for divorce." That made me chuckle. My what-the-fuck card is the Dragon Hunter, and if only for... it just seems like a major flavor failure. So it costs 1 white, it's a 2/1 human warrior, protection from dragons. Dragon Hunter can block dragons as though it had reach, but it's white, so it can't block Stormbreath Dragon.
Yep.
I don't get it, but...
Yeah, I see myself casting that card a lot in limited and not at all in constructed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other card I'm kind of not sure about, and it seems to be getting a lot of hype, is the Deathmist Raptor. It's a 3/3 lizard. It costs 1 and 2 green, and I'm not really here for Metamorph anyways. Like, I'm not a big fan of that to begin with, but this just sort of compounds the issue. So it is, let me find it on my spoiler list. Where are you? Okay, so it is 3/3 death touch. Whenever a permanent you control is turned face up, you may return it from your graveyard to the battlefield face up or face down. We don't even really use Morph in Constructed anyways. Like, Sagu Mahler isn't seeing any play. I just don't see this being a thing. And people are, it's going for $8 now, pre-order on Star City. I just don't see the fuss about this guy.
I also had the same thought about, oh, what's it called? The one that mills them and gives them a creature. But it doesn't actually mill them.
Oh,
The
the
one that Chris
reincarnation?
said.
Okay.
Yeah. I was thinking that that would be good against, like, a control deck, except it shuffles everything, because I was like, maybe they don't have another creature left, and then you can just mill them out. But that's not actually how it works, so it's a lot worse than I thought.
That's not a bad idea, though. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, because, like, if they play their one of, like, Salamgar or something, and then they don't have anything else, then you get them, but you just don't actually get them, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's a good point. So something that was on my mind recently is how competitive a pre-release should be. There are a couple of local game stores in my area that offer some really wild prize support for their pre-releases. I think one store is even offering a case of
Wow.
dragons or a case of something, and it's just obnoxious. And I'd like to think that when you see the advertising for pre-releases, they're sold as sort of being events for anybody, where you can just walk to your local game store and you can just pick up a box and start playing. And they really do sell them as these sort of beginner intermediate level events. And then you have stores offering cases and attracting a really spiky crowd. How do you all feel about that? Like, do you feel that they should stay sort of casual, or do you not mind when they step it up a little bit?
I think they should stay casual. I mean, I think the focus should really be on, getting newer players into the game and introducing them to competitive play, not sort of like overwhelming them with an environment that's going to be full of spiky players or grinders. So I think keeping the prize support reasonable will, ensure a crowd like that.
Yeah, when there's too big of a prize, offered, or they get a little cray about it, then it's kind of like, well, now all these other people are going to come in that are more competitive possibly and ruin everybody's fun. Nobody wants that.
Yeah, I agree with keeping them casual. Like, our store does, so if you win 0 or 1 round, you get 1 pack. And if you win 2 rounds, you get 3 packs. If you win 3 rounds, you get 5 packs. And at our midnight, we only do 3 rounds. And then at our main event on Saturday, we do 4 rounds. And then it, continues to scale up from there. But it's basically like, it doesn't matter where you fall on the final standings or anything. Like, you didn't win anything. Okay, well, here's your pack. Glad you had fun. Keep coming back. And I think that's a good way to keep casual players and competitive players happy. I mean, you win something and you're rewarded if you go 4-0, but you also win something if you went 0-4. And I
I
think
like that
that makes
idea.
it fun for everyone.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah, I think that they should be the places to learn what the mechanics do and to learn what the cards do. Katie, you said that you sometimes have to see what does that card do, and I think that's the place to do that. And I feel like when you make them so competitive, people don't have anywhere to learn. So then they're going to go to a Star City Open, and that's not the place to, get familiar with cards and figure out what Megamorph does. You have pre-releases and you have FNM to get those kinks out. I like that. I also think it's important to have places where you don't have to be on all the time. I'm already competitive enough where I go to FNM and I want to cream people and I go to opens and I want to stomp the yard. And it's nice to have that day where you can just sort of throw up your hands and go, wee, and you're just having fun. And it's not about, O2 dropping, and it's not about, how many points until you make day two. You're there just to have fun, and I think that's really, really important.
Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way. Like, the reason why I go to so many pre-releases isn't necessarily because I'm just like cramming Planeswalker points or like looking for all the prizes.
Lies.
It's because I'm It's because I'm trying different, I want to try different things, like, especially if there's a set that involves a lot of different color combinations representing different factions. I want to try all of them early to sort of get a jump on the limited environment coming up, but I want to use that as a place to experiment and, you know, try different things and not feel so much pressure to perform and, you know, just sort of let my ideas run wild and not, you know, not be super competitive or as competitive as I usually am.
Or test out, like, some cards that you think are going to be pretty subpar. Like,
right.
Not building your deck worse than you would normally, but instead of, you know, an FNM where it's draft and you're trying to win something that might be awesome, you can just be like, oh, well, I'm going to play with this card. Like, I don't think it's very good, but, you know, maybe it'll surprise me and be awesome, and then maybe it is or is not. But I think pre-release is just a good place to try out cards that you wouldn't normally play with going
forward. Especially, like, different rares. Like, I remember I went to, like, a Journey into Nyx pre-release, and I had a Crucifix in my deck, and I was like, well, I don't think this is all that good and limited, but I'm going to give it a shot. And I tried it. It didn't work out so well. And I was like, okay, that's something I know going forward when I actually, you know, draft this set when there's something on the line.
Yeah.
Rich Hagon was on Marshall Sutcliffe's The One for One, like a long, long time ago. And he talked about how he drafted, the green-white god, Karametra?
Karametra, yeah.
The one that everybody kind of unanimously agrees is bad. But he was trying it out, and he was like, I was really ashamed when, you know, I had a few pros walking by me and they saw, oh, Karametra's in his deck. But he was like, I wouldn't have gotten to test it if I hadn't played with it and gotten to see that, oh, yeah, for myself, it was actually not very good. And I think pre-release is just another place to try and do that.
Yeah, definitely.
Speaking of pre-releases, we received our first email from a listener the other day with a question for us. I'm probably going to slaughter this person's name, so I apologize in advance, but Oystein Collis, we're just going to call them O. Hey, O, thank you so much for the email. And this is what O had to ask us. O says, hello, Aaron and the others. In your latest episode, when you were discussing how people were behaving towards females playing Magic, I remembered something that happened when I got back into the game during Innistrad pre-release. We were seated, given our packs and pre-release card, which you were not allowed to play with at the time. A female player was sitting next to me, and after I finished building my pool, I saw that she had the pre-release card in her deck. I told her, hi, you can't play with that card in your deck. One of the male players close by must have overheard it and said, hey, be nice to her. I would have said the same thing and in the same way if it was a young/old male/female player, and I had no intention of being rude. What are your thoughts on this? Do you think the male player would react in the same way if it was a male player I talked to? Regards, O.
So Aaron had forwarded this email to us, and we talked about it before recording the show. And I remember the first question that I had, I guess, was what tone he had used when he said that to her. I think that is probably, why the other player chose to step in. Like, I think some people aren't always, I don't know, I'm trying to think of the best way to put it. Like,
cognizant?
Yeah, I think sometimes you'll say something and you're not always conscious of how you're saying it or how it's coming across to other people. And maybe he just meant for it to be an innocent, like, hey, you, just so you know, you can't put this in your deck, like, in just like a friendly way. And, you know, from the way he was describing it, it seemed like he was just trying to be helpful. But, you know, I could see how it could come across as rude, depending on how he said it or, you know, how someone else interpreted it. It's also possible that the player who overheard thought that he sounded rude and the woman he was talking to didn't, you know, I'm not really sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can definitely see how tone would be an issue. Like, so for example, you could be like, let's say he saw her doing that. You'd be like, oh, you can't play with that card in your deck. Sorry. You know, like, I think that's kind of cool. But if you're like, yeah. Hi, you can't play with that card in your deck. Like,
yeah.
One comes across more like, oh, God, I hate to do this, but, and the other comes across like, you should know better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine you with, like, a big sassy finger being like, excuse me?
I did actually wag at the screen. I really did.
I got my sassy finger out, too. It was just sitting ready to go.
Do you think there, have you ever experienced the other person, the male player who just jumps in? Like, have you ever had an interaction that you didn't find to be a problem, but somebody else thought they were doing the right thing and sort of charged in to defend you or help you? No.
No.
Okay.
Don't think so.
Okay.
I think I had, maybe there was like one instance. Oh, I know. I was playing a match. I don't remember which cards we were using, but someone said, "Well, this works like this," and it was just an outside spectator. And I looked right at him. I'm like, "I know how to play. Thanks. I appreciate you trying to help me, but I know what the card does." And I think that's what happened. And he was like, "Whoa, so sorry." And he's a totally cool guy. You know, I see him all the time, but he didn't know. And he was legitimately trying to be helpful. And I didn't mean to come off poorly, but sometimes, you know, it's hard to gauge if someone's telling you something to be helpful or if they're just, I don't know, trying to be a jerk or something.
Yeah, at the modern thing that I topped for it a few weeks ago, in round one, I was playing against Soul Sisters, and our first game went really long, and I ended up conceding. I thought I could make a comeback, which is why I kept playing. And we were shuffling up for game two, and like one of the last plays before I conceded was the guy had ghost quartered my colonnade or something like that, and I didn't go search for it, and I had forgotten to search, but I was gonna concede anyway. And we were in between games and we were shuffling really fast trying to go to the next game, and a guy sitting next to me was like, "Hey, just so you know, you can search with Ghost Quarter." And I really snapped at him and I was like, "You can't be telling me that right now." And he got a match loss for outside assistance. And I like
Oh.
snapped at him meanly to try and prevent him from doing that. But he was trying to be helpful. So I have had people step in and try and be helpful when I'm like, "No, you shouldn't be helpful right currently now, please."
That's a good point. How do you determine when a guy is mansplaining? The term is mansplaining. So, do you have indicators that you look for to determine that? Because it does sound like it's tricky to identify.
Well, I do think it walks a very fine line. There are some men that are legitimately trying to be helpful to their opponent or, you know, someone that's playing, regardless of their gender. But it's hard to gauge that with someone that you really don't know. Maybe you've never met them before.
Yeah.
I have had people that are like super nice to me when we're shuffling up, and they're like, "Oh, you know, how are you doing?" And then like 3 turns into the game, when they kind of realize like, "Oh, she kind of knows exactly what she's doing," they get really not very nice anymore. Like,
Yes.
they play against you like they think you're the bye, and then as soon as they're like, "Oh no, she's gonna win," they're like, "Well, I'm not going to be nice anymore." And
Yeah.
I don't like that. I feel like that's super noticeable, and I always realize when people are doing it, and I feel like everybody else probably does too if somebody just has a change of heart in the middle of a game. But you know, I wish that that wasn't the case, because I feel like I try to be nice to them the whole way through. I don't think you should just be nice to somebody when you think you're gonna beat them. Like, I don't understand that mindset, I
I
guess.
have an amazing story about this. Can I tell you? Okay.
Yes.
So the last modern PTQ of the season, when it was just PTQs, was in August. I was playing Living End because I hadn't quite assembled the pieces for Junk yet. I'm at this PTQ. It's like the sixth round or so. And I sit down. My opponent comes up to me and he looks at the match slip. He goes, "Ugh, they got my name wrong again." And I look at him and I'm like, "Oh God, that's terrible. Like, do you need to go get it fixed? I can wait." He extends his hand and he goes, "Dak Fayden, Thief of the
Oh my God,
And I was
what?
like, "Oh." So I don't take the hand. I was like, "Nice to meet you." So he sits down, and like you said, I think he went into it thinking, "I'm going to be charming, I'm going to be goofy, I'm going to be lovable." And I was just wanting to play. And I wasn't mean, but I was just like, "What are you doing? Like that, you have an opening line? What's going on?" So, and like you said, so he went into it being very, you know, fun loving, and then once he saw that I wasn't having it, he became a colossal tool. And suddenly he became a rules layer. "How are you able to cast that violent outburst? I got a blood moon." And I have a forest and a non-basic, red, green, colorless. Back off. And then we both ended up calling judges on each other because we were ready to tear each other's throats out because he was trying to rule lawyer. I certainly wasn't having it. And I remember the poor judge came over and he's just like, And he just didn't know what to do because we were both ready to kill each other. And it just didn't need to go like that. Like, had he not, you know, talked down to me like that or thought that that was something I wanted to hear, it probably wouldn't have gone like that. But it was just a bad idea. Like, I don't know what he was thinking.
Yeah. This kind of brings up, like, if somebody's trying to, like, hit on you or something along those lines at a tournament, how to handle it. I feel like there is really no good way to handle it, which is why I guess I don't like when people come up to me and, you know, whether or not they're hitting on me or just flirting or just being friendly, it kind of always puts, you know, whoever's on the receiving end in an awkward position because it's like, no, I'm not really interested. It feels like in Magic that turns into like, well, you're not being nice to me anymore. Mm. You know, and I don't know how to, like, I guess I'm not very good at walking that line. Like, I'm not interested in dating you, but now, as soon as I say that, you're going to be a giant D-bag. I don't know if
I
you guys have
depends
experienced
on
that.
Well, when Aaron and I went to regionals, after
I remember this!
you already know what I'm going to say. Okay, after I helped my previous opponent beat me, I sat down at the very last table in the far corner. We were in the darkness over there. And it was me and this other guy. And he had been playing next to me the previous round. And I had watched him play another guy. And it was pretty funny watching them play. He sits down across from me and he says, you know, I wasn't going to play this round, but you're cute. And I was like, oh, that's cool, thanks. And he sat down across from me. We had an amazing game. He was totally cool. He hit on me a little bit. No big. Like, he was harmless. Number one, his name was Chris Brown, and he talked like Lil Jon. I was waiting for him to be like, skeet, 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 everywhere. But he was hilarious the whole time. We had a mirror match with our Sultai control decks. Good times. He thanked me, you know, so much for the games. He was a pleasure to play with. Totally harmless. If it had been maybe another situation, I might have been like, maybe I'll peace out of this situation, but he was totally cool. If I ever see him again, I'm going to be like, hey, man, we can definitely play anytime.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I do feel like, I mean, I've met people at events, and I do think that I don't think it should be ruled out entirely. Like, I definitely think that you should take into consideration somebody's comfort zone and finding a good time. But I do feel like Magic is a social game, and I don't rule out the possibility of somebody maybe. I had Nathan Holt on my show once, and he compared Magic to speed dating, where you're meeting 8 strangers in a day. And I don't rule out the possibility that you might find somebody that you get along with or you might click with. And, you know, I personally wouldn't be upset if somebody found a good time and said, hey, you know, I had a lot of fun playing with you. You know, are you from around here? You know, what do you say we get a drink in between rounds? You get a little bottle of water, you get a whatever. I personally wouldn't mind that. But like we've said, though, it's context, it's approach. It's, you know, not assuming that I'm going to be down for that. It has to be well played, but I don't rule out the possibility. I think that you can meet somebody anywhere. I think if you were in a bowling league or you played volleyball on Tuesday nights, you know, you're bound to meet somebody. When you meet that many people and you cycle through so many faces, I don't think it's that uncommon that you might find somebody that you click with, but it's how you go about it. And I don't know.
I think finding the right time is like the key
yeah.
there because I feel like a lot of the experience I've had that have been bad are because it's just like when I'm in the middle of something or trying to do, you know, play my tournament or whatever it is, and it's just not a good time. So maybe that's just a key that I should be like, hey, maybe later you should come up and retry this.
I could see if you had been, say it was like a 9-round open, you're at an SCG open, and you played each other earlier in the day. I think you had to have at least played each other. I'm going to say that's my minimum. We have to have had more contact than just I walked past you. But say I played you round 3, and we seem to find each other in between rounds, and you're sort of bantering about how your games go, and maybe the conversation drifts into real life. And that keeps happening. So between round 4 and 5, you're chatting with this person. And between round 6 and 7, you're chatting with this person. And then say you're towards the last round of the day. You know, at that point, I could maybe see somebody saying, hey, you know, we've been talking throughout the day. You know, we're clearly getting along. What do you say we go to Arby's after this? Because we're all hungry after events. And, you know, I think that's a really good time to make that move if that's something you're interested in. And because you've built a rapport, it doesn't seem so random. The day is ending anyways. We're all hungry after an event. I think that's a way to play that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So was there anything else we wanted to get off our chest before we wrap up this episode?
I drafted Triple Fate Reforged yesterday, and it was crazy.
How did that go?
So I went to the Lady Planeswalker Society, and Tifa is a big fan of triple small set drafts for some reason. Like, she loves triple Dark Ascension. That's, like, her favorite draft format. So every so often, she'll have these triple small set drafts, and I was joking on the way over that I was going to force mono blue, just because of all the colors, blue probably has the most playable commons, and then it just sort of happened that, like, I kept opening, like, oh, here's a Right Into Being, here's a Whisk Away, here's a Jeskai Sage, here's a Lotus Path Djinn, and so I ended up with this really heavy blue deck. And I went 2-1, losing to the guy who had, like, 4 Bathe and Dragon Fires.
Sweet deck.
But I always end up enjoying them more than I think I will, just because it's sort of a fun puzzle to solve, like, trying to figure out what's good in a format that isn't played very often.
Our store, we have a pre-release, and then the next week for FNM, no matter what size set it is or anything, we have triple of that set that just came out. And so we did a triple Fate Reforged, and I loved it. I, like, went 4-0, I drafted a really sweet deck, and everybody else is like, I hate this. This is meant to be drafted with other things. And I was like, no, this is my jam. I'm doing it. And I told you, Hallie, on Twitter that I have a box of Russian Fate Reforged that's just waiting to be drafted, if I can just find people who can stand it long enough.
Bring it to Vegas.
Could we draft it at Lotus of Siam? Because we're going there.
I can read in Russian. Like, I'd totally draft it with you.
I'm really jealous. I get a box of Russian set for, like, every set that comes out.
Chris, how did your night with Counterburn go? You were playing Adrian Sullivan's deck, yeah?
Oh, yes, I was. I forgot about that.
it went that well,
so
huh?
Well. Yeah, I didn't do so well. The first match I played was versus Red Deck Wins, which was not so favorable for me, because you're using most of your burn spells to kill their creatures, and it just felt like every time I was, like, starting to catch up, I just got annihilated. I think I got swept for that round. Then I played this kid that was really, you know, super nice, knew how to play, great kid. He was playing, like, this green-red fatties deck, and he was just, like, dropping, like, Hydra Broodmaster and a bunch of other crazy crap, and I was like, holy shit, how am I going to deal with that? And so I had to waste, like, both of my Ugins to get rid of his bigger things that were on the board. I did end up beating him, so that was pretty cool. And then, I think it was right after him, I had to play this kid that I hope I never have to play him ever again. He was probably maybe like 14 or so, but everything I played, he was like, oh, this is going to be the worst. Oh, can you believe it, guys? She's playing this counterspell. Oh, my God. Oh, I bet she's got it. Do I get it? And I'm just like, yep, you got it. And he's like, oh, and he was just like, everything just was like painful for him. And I'm like, you okay? Like, is this all right? Like, are we having like a bad moment here or something? It was just very like, I don't know, very stressful. He actually won one of the games. He was doing a lot of morph creatures. He had one he flipped up, he gained some life. It's like, okay, that's cool, whatever. And so I won the first game, he won the second. And then I think we went to game 3 and I was like, how are we here? Like, I don't even know. And we drew, but I was just like, just let me be done with this kid. I've never met him before. And he was just not very fun to play against because I was, you know, nice. Wasn't like I was mean. He was just like very not cool with my deck. And then the last round I played Jeskai Tokens and whoop, nope. That was very, very bad for me as well.
I'm going to do that the next time I see you. Like, we're going to hang out on Friday and you're going to say, do you want to get food before FNM? Ugh! Should I leave and get coffee in between? Ugh.
Yeah, he was just not cool. And, you know, the day before that, we had had a blood drive at a high school, and our tablets went down, and this kid's waiting in my booth, and he's like, oh, how much longer is this going to be? I'm like, you got somewhere to be? And he's like, no. I'm like, all right, have a seat then. He's like, but I left my tablet in my backpack. And I'm like, uh-huh. And he's like, I could be doing, you know, so much more right now. I was like, it'll be okay. So that and that kid Fred Magic, I was like, I can't even. There's just a lot to deal with. But the deck was cool. There's definitely things that I would tweak for sure for FNM to not tomorrow, Friday. I'm going to either play Blue Black Control, Patrick Chapin's build from Top Level Podcast, or I'm going to do Jim Davis's deck that he played this past weekend, the Jeskai Aggro deck. I have both together, so I just got to decide which one I want to commit to.
If you're thinking of going blue-black control, I would also consider Andrea Mangucci's list from Channel Fireball. He writes these really amazing primers where he goes into like sideboard choices, and I just love him. If he writes about a deck, I'm highly likely to play it because he does such a good job.
Oh, cool. Maybe I'll check that out, too.
He found me on Twitter once. It was so funny. I made a comment that he looked like one of the guys from Fun.
Oh, my most hated band.
Well, I made a comment. I was like, you know, he's got a good head of hair, and he looks like one of the guys from Fun. And I think I called him a hipster, lovingly so. And out of nowhere, I just got this tweet from him, and he goes, oh, I'm so hipster. And I'm like, oh, my God, you're on Twitter. And a very cool guy, and I enjoy him very much. So I was at Eternal Extravaganza this past weekend in Philadelphia. Did not do well. I dropped at 0-3. Played a very spicy Gifts Tron list game one, which I was not happy about. I faced some really decent people. I had a lot of fun outside of the event, but I can't say I had a lot of fun actually playing. So I did end up going back to Jund because Bay wrote a primer on Jund. And it goes really well with my Veraska playmat. I got the GP Milan playmat with Veraska, which is awesome. The one thing I took away from Eternal Extravaganza is Vintage is unlike anything you've ever seen before. Mm-hmm. They had a Vintage event the same day as the Modern main event, and they were in two different rooms. And the store was built in such a way where there were no doors. You could just literally walk in a circle and see the whole store. So there was a side room, which was for drafting, and a bathroom, and then there was the store area with the cases and the racks. You go into another room, and that was where the Modern event was happening. And then a fourth room where the Vintage event was happening. And the Modern event was so quiet and so tense. Everybody's trying to win. Everybody's really hungry. You know, it was just a very tense mood. You walk into the Vintage room and there's laughter and there's sound and conversations happening. I thought it meant that all their games were done. Like, I walk in the room and I'm like, oh, they're in between rounds. That's why they're so chatty. No, they're all chatting while they play. They're all laughing while they play. And you could walk between the two rooms, walk in the Vintage room, walk in the Modern room, and feel the difference. Like, the Vintage room was just so much lighter. And I couldn't get over it. It was so noticeable. I was like, is it always like this? And people that I asked were like, it's Vintage. Like, you have no more fucks about losing anymore because, you know, you're going into it with these $1,000 decks or tens of $1,000 decks, or you're doing absurd things where you're just happy to be doing them. Like, it's not about, I've got to grind Planeswalker points, I've got to make top eight, I've got to earn bus money home. You're just having fun, and it made me really want to think about getting into it.
Nice.
How many people showed up for their Vintage?
Honestly,
or how big was this thing?
Well, Eternal Extravaganza, so the main event was Legacy, so that happened on Saturday, and the main event I think had about 300 people. Okay. The Modern event, a little over 120, I want to say 120, 150, and the Vintage event had about 100. And it was, like I said, it was just such a different mood. And there was a group of guys who I thought they were so great. They all had these t-shirts that said hashtag TVD. I was like, what does that mean? My friend Kate goes, it means the Vintage, Team Vintage Dads. So it was a group of guys that were all dads. They've all kind of, again, given up that competitive lifestyle, that competitive dream. They have good jobs. They're going to put their money in Vintage and just have fun with it. And I enjoyed being around them so much, and it was a blast.
Cool.
Yeah. which made up for the bathroom situation, because
was it that bad?
You guys really want to know?
I do. All right.
Okay. So they had two bathrooms. One of which, okay, there was a door that leads you into the bathroom. So you open the door, you see a sink and a urinal. Not done. So that's what you see. And mind you, okay, so then to the left of that is a door which leads to the toilet. And they're actually separate rooms. But you have to walk through the urinal part to get to the bathroom part. So if I wasn't careful, I was opening the door on some poor guy peeing. To get to the side room so that I could use the toilet. Or they would see me and the sink was by the urinal. So if I got done using the bathroom and I walked out of my side room into the main room and some guy's peeing, I need to wash my hands. And the sink is right by the urinal. Like it was...
Like they're on the same wall.
Yeah.
So you're like, here, let me wash my hands while you have your penis in your hands.
Yes.
That's so funny. There's a game store that I used to go to that had a bathroom like that, where it was just like one unisex bathroom with one stall and one urinal and one sink. And I just stopped going to that store because I hated using that bathroom.
Yeah. There were guys that would even walk into the room and they would see me washing my hands. So they'd open the door, see a girl washing her hands, and they're like, oh. And they'd look at the urinal, so they'd know what was about to happen. They're like, I gotta pee, but you're standing there, and God, this is weird. And then they turn around and walk out, and that was just so weird. And then the other bathroom, there were lines usually at both bathrooms because there were so many people. The other bathroom had the sink separate from – it was a room. There was no urinal, so it was just a little room with a toilet. And you walk out, and then you walk out to the sink room. And I can't tell you how many guys I saw walk out of that room – and not flush their toilets and not wash their hands.
Nope. Yep. You're not touching my dick like that. I'm so sorry.
And because I'm waiting in line. Like, I'm waiting in line to use the bathroom. So I'm seeing the guy leave the toilet area. I'm not seeing him walk into the adjoining sink room. He just walked right out. And then I went in after him, and I see that he didn't flush. And I also saw that he didn't wash his hands. And I saw a good three or four guys that did not do either when I was waiting in line. I was like, how? It just blew me away.
What's your mama teaching you?
Right?
I know.
Right?
That's terrible. That's why I'm always thankful for Rockheads, the store that's in town here, because they have two separate bathrooms, I think upstairs and downstairs. But the downstairs bathroom, there's a woman's restroom, and there's one for men to use that has a urinal in it. And I know it was really important to one of the lady store owners to have that. She's like, no. She's like, the old bathrooms were a bad scene. We need to make sure the women have a nice bathroom here. And I was like, thank you so much.
The most ironic thing, when I was using the first bathroom, the one that had the urinal and the toilet together, I went in to use the bathroom, and I go to sit down, and I find a magic card laying on the floor. Swear to God, if the camera in my phone worked, I would have taken a picture. Guess what card from Fate Reforged was laying on the floor?
Oh, don't even know.
Grim Contest.
What?
Irony, friends. You're in a dirty bathroom and you find Grim Contest laying on the floor.
Someone has a sick sense of humor.
I don't even think it was planned. I think it really was just somebody, like, it wasn't set in any sort of like nice way. It was just sort of, you know, at a weird angle in the middle of the floor. The floor was a little wet just from everybody's feet because it had rained that day. So it was just sort of stuck to the floor. And I'm like, so I sit down and I look at the floor. I'm like, oh, there's a magic card. I wonder what. Yeah.
Man, sometimes when people shuffle my deck, I'm like, I know that you're right, but maybe you could just not shuffle it. There's so many germs at Magic tournaments. I don't know.
I know. I remember
hearing this horror story about not washing hands.
I remember I was watching SCG coverage one day, and Chris Van Meter, who I love the Van Meter, he was biting his nails on camera. And I used to be a nail biter as well, so I've become a lot more hypersensitive to that. But I'm watching him chew away like a little chipmunk, and then his opponent hands him the deck, and it was almost in slow motion. Like, I could see the hand, like, and the hands lowering, and I was just like, ah! And then he cuts it, and I don't know how I would have reacted if I had seen somebody gnaw at their nails and then reach. No, oof. Can't do it. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to us, you can find, what a great way to end the show, right?
Dirty hands.
Right. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to this show, you can find us exclusively on GatheringMagic.com. We are on iTunes. You can subscribe and leave us a review and some stars. Ladies, if anybody wants to reach out to you directly, how can they get a hold of you?
My Twitter is techris, T-E-H-K-R-I-Z. My email is yotechris, yotehkriz, @gmail.com, and my Tumblr is also techris.
You can find me on Twitter @halcansan, that's H-A-L-C-A-N-S-A-N, and you can read my articles here on Gathering Magic.
You can find me on Twitter @katyn_14, or by email katie.neil14@gmail.com.
And you can find me on Twitter @originalestrus, O-R-I-G-I-N-A-L-O-E-S-T-R-U-S. And you can email me @estrus, O-E-S-T-R-U-S, @elitistjerks.com. This has been a really great show. Thank you, ladies, for joining me. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And be sure and tune in next week. Bye.
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 Bye.